Welcome to Victoria Rumble Room, an island show that likes to reach out and touch the issues near and far. I'm Robin Adair, and with his touching commentary every week, as always, is my co-host with the most, John Jurisic. And John, we've covered so many topics over the last few weeks that our mailbag is starting to rip at the seams. We've got so much feedback.
Wow, you're right. And we really appreciate hearing from the close to 1.7 million people who've turned on our show over the past 2.5 years. Feels like last week. In fact, close to 75,000 cumulative views in January. Come on. Thank you. Thanks, everyone, for watching and watching me move all over the place. Here's what people are commenting on. We've had former MLA Sheila Orr on a couple of shows, and she certainly made her feelings felt about the upcoming BC election. She thinks it's the NDP's to lose. Now, Roger writes us, Ellis Ross leaving BC United to go with the federal conservatives is a huge loss for Falcon. However, I hope they pick up steam and make a contest this coming fall. The housing issues are a true conundrum.
And, you know, we've had a lot to talk about when it comes to housing over the last few weeks, including what's happened with the government stepping in to change the rules on short-term Airbnbs. They will be a thing of the past this spring. Also, new provincial laws that override municipalities and are going to push through more housing more quickly. At least that's the plan. So the question is, will this work? And here's what one of our viewers, Kevin, who's also a regular contributor to this show, had to say. Anytime government determines they can manipulate the housing market, they may placate their base, but there's next to zero chance that their policy will come close to achieving stated goals. Shame on city councils not advocating for citizens and just rolling over.
Kevin, thanks for that wonderful segue. That leads us to our first guest. Stephen Hammond is a Victoria councillor who was elected with a promise to clean up street crime and work collaboratively to ensure police are properly funded while keeping public spending and taxes under control. Thank you, Stephen. How's this been going, by the way? Let's ask him and zoom him in. Now, joining us in the Victoria Rumble Room for the first time is Victoria City Councillor Stephen Hammond. Great to have you on the show, Stephen.
Thanks, John. Nice to be here with you and Robin.
Absolutely. We keep hearing that there are silos at City Hall where a majority slate sing off a certain song sheet with the minority left on the sidelines. Is that a fair description of your environment at City Chambers?
Look, there's a number of times I've said openly in open council meetings about I'm on the minority in council. And so, yeah, the my colleagues, the five who were endorsed by a few different groups together, and then they put all their brochures together, they got elected. And the interesting thing is, as much as I'm on the minority and it can be frustrating, I was brought up with politics. My mom was around politics all her life. Then she became a politician, a member of the legislature in Manitoba. And when she retired from politics, she was a cabinet minister. So, and I actually work for a political party. I have a political studies degree from the University of Manitoba before I went into law. So I appreciate the democratic process. And so whenever anyone gets upset or I get an email or a phone call from someone who they say, oh, you know, they don't have the right to do this, I say, well, yes, they do, because the enough voters voted them in. And that's the democratic process. It would be like me being Donald Trump and saying, you know, I don't accept the results. Or the occasional person would say, well, they didn't know what they were doing. That's up to the voters. I doubt it. I'm sure they knew what they were doing. And do keep in mind, I think if you look at most of the votes are unanimous because they're procedural, they're easy, there are things that we have to do and no one argues with them. Most of the votes are unanimous on council.
Well, you've been more transparent than the last council. I haven't seen anybody hauling off a statue like Sir John A. Macdonald, never to be seen again. So well done on that. Now, You have been very busy as a council dealing with a lot of major housing proposals, not just one, but several big proposals on the docket. And of course, the biggest, I guess it's fair to say, is the Bayview property proposal. So my big question to you is, things are going to shift. The province is now taking some of the responsibility for these big decisions, and they're saying, you don't have all the say on whether these things go or don't go. And I'm saying you, I mean municipal civic government. And is this, in your mind, something that you think, which will speed up the housing approvals, a good thing or a bad thing, or is it still to be determined?
Look, it's a good thing and a bad thing. On the one hand, it frees up more of my time. So, or presumably so, if I just wanted to be crass about it, that could mean that it's going to be easier for me. The downside is that we don't get to hear from the public. And that's the first I was saying in jest. The downside is truly that we won't be able to hear things from the public. And through the hearing process, this hearing process that we were doing for Bayview and others, there are things that come up that people tell us that we did not know, or at least I did not know. And this is where it's constantly a reminder that it can be a tedious process. It can be a longer process. It's a bit like what they say about democracy, right? You know, it can be a very difficult process, but it's a hell of a lot better than everything else. And so in this particular case, that's being taken away from us. We have no say in that matter. And so we'll find out whether it's a good thing or a bad thing.
Stephen, so I'm gonna be pinging about the municipal pinball machine here from big issue to big issue. Sure. I know you are a strong advocate of safer streets.
Yes.
You are part of the Mad as Hell movement that sprung up a few years ago because of the establishment, of course, of tent cities by the courthouse and later in a number of city parks. We have panels working on this file, a police chief trying to do his best, but it appears there's quite a mess still in front of us, actually visibly in front of us. Have you seen any improvements since you've become counselor? And if not, do you have any suggestions on how to proceed?
Well, you see, depending on the neighborhood you're in, you're going to see an improvement. Because, and this was something that for my colleague, Mark Gardner, she's been right all along. And there are times where I've still gone along with it, even, you know, just sort of biting my tongue, where she said, we're picking winners and losers. When we say there is not going to be camping, for example, in Stadacona Park by a certain day, and then people move over to Vic West. Well, I've been over to Vic West where there's a lot of people who are camping there. And so in some circumstances it's better. We also have a lot more people who are doing the detailed work that needs to be done. The interesting thing is I've done two ride-alongs with bylaw when I lived in Vancouver and was doing consulting work for the police in Vancouver. And one guy said, Stephen, you have no clue what's going along. And I said, okay, I'll do a ride along in the middle of the night. And that was an eye opener. And then I did one here when I got on council. And so in these ride alongs, you really see that it comes down to the individual. Like the police and bylaw, they know these people's names. They know their circumstances. They know what they need. And under many circumstances, they're just not getting it. There was one time when I was with bylaw and Vic West, and I looked at this woman packing up in what looked like a relatively nice carry-on luggage that you'd have on the plane. And she was very neatly packing it up. And it's funny, I said to the manager of the bylaw, I said, can I go and talk to her? And I thought I didn't need her permission. You know, I'm a citizen, let alone a counselor. So I went over and talked to her. And it turns out that her spouse got violent with her, threw her out of the house, and there she's been camping for 2 weeks. And so when I mentioned this to the manager, he got in touch with someone from the province who in 10, maybe 15 minutes was there, found out that there's a program to help her out so that she could actually get enough money to get to Alberta where she could stay with relatives until the legal stuff was worked out so that she could get presumably her half of her property. And so the interesting thing is not everything is so neat and tidy as that, but it is where bylaw and police and other social agencies can actually do something with the individuals. And what I have difficulty with is when we have many social service organizations, let's say, you know, nonprofits, who a lot of time is spent in committee meetings. And I don't see a lot of I don't see a lot of stuff actually being done by some of them. And maybe it's unfair that someone can help me, but it seems to me as though for a social service agency, nonprofit or government, their first mandate should be how do they work themselves out of a job? With the province building so much housing for people who are right off the street and people with special needs of some kind, there's a lot that's being done, and I give the province credit for that. Of course, where I have issues is the safety that sometimes or a number of times is missing around these facilities.
I wanted to talk with you about things that are around the water cooler, whether it's fact or fiction, speculation, or if it's real. Of course, there's always rumblings about the outrageous amount you're going to raise city taxes, and both business and your residential taxpayers are always interested in that. Also, I've heard rumblings about a discussion around changing the name of Victoria to something that's more friendly to this future generation and less colonial and less settler sounding. And I don't know if that's true or not. And, we certainly...
You want me to respond to these?
I do want you to respond. These are all the things that are rumbling around. And we're kind of curious to know what you're hearing and how much of it is just speculation or just idle gossip or real.
So what was the first thing you mentioned?
Well, taxes going up through the roof. Well, I think that's a good one.
That's for everyone to see. And thank goodness for our director of finance she's the assistant city manager, I believe, Suzanne Thompson, that we get 5 years out so that we know exactly what's going to be happening. And right now, the five-year projection is when you accumulate those, when you add it on top of the other, it's 53% over 5 years. That to me is absurd. That is just unbelievable. And I won't be voting for anything anywhere along those lines. And the difficulty is that if you want to ask about anything that's truly going to be cut, you won't get the majority to support that. And that I just know that we could be cutting some services. The difficulty is the process we've got is that I'm the one who's expected to come and say what needs to be cut. And I appreciate that some people say, well, yeah, Stephen, that's your job. You know what? Not as a generalist city councilor making $51,000 a year at this job. And I'm not complaining about the money, but like, don't expect me to be the person who knows where you can cut. And I've said this before, the last budget, I've said it this budget, and no one's interested in hearing that, or at least not the majority and not the mayor.
I did get this from a fairly good source that there's actual rumble around about at least having a debate about it, a discussion about whether Victoria's name is antiquated in this modern age of political correctness.
Well, maybe my last name Hammond is antiquated and I need to change that. The fact is that would be absurd. That would be absolutely absurd. I don't mind saying that there was one person who suggested that to me and I didn't give it not on council or anywhere near City Hall. And I just said, oh, I'm sure that is ridiculous rumors. That would be about as bizarre as it comes. If you want a reconciliation for some reason or something different, then continue doing it with the programs we do with First Nations and the relationship that we have. Or I don't know who else you want to please, but it's Victoria, for God's sakes.
Mm-hmm. Stephen, I want to swing over to a pet issue. Actually, in my case, more like a survival issue of mine. That being bike paths, bike safety, bike valet service at City Hall. As I've said many times before on the show and off of this show, and actually with Matt. Matt, how are you? We'd love to have you on. I love riding my bike around Greater Victoria and into the city. Gorgeous paths. Really astounding and safe. And personally, I'd have no problem paying a couple of bucks to have my bike safely stored. It's an e-bike. That's almost a necessity that it has to be stored somewhere. Mm-hmm. So, two questions. I'm not entirely clear why there is such pushback from the cycling lobby on a minimal payment for the valet service. And secondly, I'm very interested to hear your thoughts on making bike paths more compatible and safer with car traffic. And is there something we can do? Sometimes, and this is just a function of the process and of the ongoing development of this issue, you can hit an intersection and be staring at about 15 lights.
Right.
And not only is that difficult for me, That's difficult for a driver, you know, coming through that thing at maybe 30K. So there you go. There's the whole bike thing.
All right. On the first issue about paying, I would have wanted that. I would have liked that, but I immediately understand the logistics and the safety issues of getting into money. Now, there was something that was brought up by, I think, Mar Gardner again, when she was talking about some different sort of pay systems, and the concern would be that you'd lose people as soon as you have any pay. I'm a very active cyclist, and I don't mind saying that we have a Peloton here at home, and that's where I get my exercise on the Peloton. And we got it the Christmas before COVID, so it was just an absolute coincidence that we just lucked into it, and I love it, and I haven't gone back to the gym since. But when I say that, I just say I don't do it for exercise. I do it as my preferred way to get around town. And I'm the most impatient person in the world. Like I you if you guys think you're impatient, forget it. You can't light a candle near me. The thing is that I hate lights. So as a cyclist, even obeying the law, I know how to get around. I know stop signs are a hell of a lot better than lights where you have to wait. And so I'm just a guy who gets around by bike a lot. If we want to take cycling from this neat sort of recreational thing into a very important part of transportation, then us cyclists also have to be part of paying for the process. So I would like that to be done, but if it's going to be so cumbersome, let's say for the bike valet, so cumbersome that it becomes a safety issue or more time is spent on them, you know, getting payment or something goes down, then bringing people in, you know, I don't know that that's going to be a good result. So I'm open to, hey, can you find an easier pay system that would be safe and yeah. So let's just say if there's something that could be done for that.
Stephen Hammond, of course, has been saying it's very difficult for councils to come up with the right formula on what exactly has to be cut or trimmed in a budget year in and year out. And of course, nobody's saying this is an easy job. And it's the big problem, of course, on the other side of the fence is the taxpayer themselves. Everyone wants more services. And how are we going to pay for them? That's the big question. Our viewer, Kelly, had some thoughts on how to cut costs and how to keep taxes under control. And he writes, "City managers should be looking at all aspects of their departments and doing a value for dollars audit to see if a dollar spent by the city goes as far as a dollar spent by the private sector. What are we paying for when the mayor says city services must be protected?"
Well, an organization that is acting as a watchdog and whistleblower when appropriate, especially when it comes to how money is being spent, are the grumpy taxpayers of Greater Victoria. John Trelevan, Chief Grumper, is here to give us his read on public spending. Let's zoom him in. You know it's tax season because John Trelevan is here from the grumpy taxpayers with plenty on his plate. Welcome back to the Victoria Rumble Room, John.
Pleasure to be here to see both of you.
Yeah, right on, right on. First up, if inflation was 3.4% in 2023, why are we hearing rumblings that some civic politicians are contemplating increases of double or triple the tax bill of last year? Is it true that taxes could actually go up that much?
Well, it's entirely true, and it's of course a long history, not just in this region, but in the province, and maybe most municipalities in Canada. We've come through a period of 20 years where there was virtually no inflation. And if you check the records going back that far, you'll find that taking into account inflation, which was, you know, 1%, population growth in most municipalities was minimal. Property tax increases were going up 200 and 300% of the inflation rate. The graph is an open jaw. I went to Sydney Council one time and years ago, and I said, "Well, I don't understand why your tax increase is far higher than the CPI." Here's what I was told: "Well, the CPI doesn't apply to us because, as a municipality, most of our expenditures are for things like concrete, steel, and asphalt. But if you look at your budget, folks, more than half your budget is personnel." More recently, there's been discussion at the City of Victoria saying that what we need, in addition to the CPI, which is really doesn't apply to us.
And CPI is?
The Canadian Consumer Price Index, generated by Stats Canada on a regular basis, hundreds of thousands of households. Anyway, but the CPI doesn't apply to us. I thought it was back in Sydney reading this. And so we would like to perhaps... Some people are talking about developing a municipal price index. Well, you know, folks, you can eliminate winter in Canada if you seasonally adjust the temperatures. Like almost anything is possible. And the problem with a municipal price index is it removes accountability from the council for a tax increase.
People don't also put much stock in the fact that municipalities can't run deficits. They're not supposed to run deficits, so they have to pass all their over expenditures directly onto taxpayers. And John, great to have you on the program. Nobody wants to see tax increases. I don't think anyone in their right mind really wants to see them, especially right now as we're climbing out of a pandemic and a slow economy. So sure. In your mind and your careful opinion, and I know you study this, what are the essential things to be spending this money on? Of course, police and fire, those are kind of the givens, but what else are musts for city spending? And in your mind also, what is outside of municipal responsibility?
Well, obviously municipal infrastructure. I mean, let us, first of all, grumpy taxpayers are not against taxes. We just don't want to see the money wasted. Secondly, municipal councils, municipalities exist to provide essential services to their populations. And water, sewers, parks, recreation, police, fire.
So where do they get off track then? Where do they get off track?
Well, if you read the Myers-Norse Penney report on governance for the City of Victoria, you will find that one of their principal recommendations is for the Victoria Council to stick to municipal matters and to have visible guidelines. I'm not sure they recommend a bylaw, but they're clear guidelines so the council understands. I mean, as I said, if you're on the board of General Motors, you build cars. That's what you're there for. Municipalities deliver services. But it's when municipalities take it upon their councils, take it upon themselves, to stray into areas that other levels of government are responsible for.
Such as
international politics, international affairs. I mean, how many resolutions has the Victoria Council passed on pretty extraneous subjects? Meanwhile, you know, there are people sleeping on the streets of Victoria, and there are huge issues facing the region of which the City of Victoria is just one small part. I don't understand how a budget process in an organization as large as the City of Victoria, and it's like 200 million plus, you'll know better than I, but it's a very large organization, doesn't begin with the council having a serious debate on affordability. What's happening in the economy? What challenges are facing the community? And the council, in terms of affordability, set a goal for the CAO to meet. I mean, you had Councillor Hammond saying that it was very difficult for a councillor to go through the city budget line by line. I understand that. But his role is to tell the CAO where the budget can go. And for far too long, municipalities, including Victoria, have gotten used to cost-plus budgeting. Go to the staff. What are you recommending? come to council. The council will always shave a percent off the ask and think they've done their job. Well, you know, we've come through COVID, opioid crisis, housing crisis. I mean, we're, you know, society is under a lot of stress. And this is the moment that the council in Victoria has got to show leadership, which it is in many areas. But on budgets, I mean, the finance minister of Canada doesn't go to each minister and say, how much do you want? And then the minister doesn't go to the deputy minister and say, well, how much do we need? And think that's making a budget. It's what can you afford?
You know, we had an earlier clip of John Trelevan when he was talking about his concerns about the Capital Regional District seeking $85 million so they can move on to acquisition of land and new housing. And his concern is he doesn't feel it's transparent enough. He'd like to see a referendum. And after this ran, Stacey wrote us and she said, there's Zippo accountability on the top. I'm feeling grateful for the grumpy taxpayers. The community needs to rally. So thank you very much, Stacey, and thank you to all the people who've taken the time to write us. We do read the comments, both good ones and some of them are negative, and we're not afraid to put the negative ones on the show, and we'll certainly do that if we feel they have some legitimacy and have a reasonable point of view. Doesn't have to agree with us, but we want to have people on that actually are thinking through some of these major issues. We really appreciate it. And John, on that happy note, time to wrap up the show.
I can't emphasize enough how much we appreciate the feedback, good or bad, mellow or angry, whatever it is, we want it. Send us your thoughts on Facebook, Twitter, now called X, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. The Rumble Room lives on all of these platforms, as well as a podcast one. Link is right below me. So if you can only hear us, perhaps tired of me moving around all the time and watching us, we have a way for you to listen to just the audio. Almost 1.7 cumulative, 1.7. I always make that mistake, don't I? Almost 1.7 million. Thank you, Robin.
1.7 million people, John.
Oh my gosh.
I know it's hard to blurt it out. It's so amazing that many people watch us. You have trouble with that every time.
Isn't that right? I think I can't believe it. Anyway, a whole bunch of people, how about that, have been attracted to our program over these past 2.5 years. We so much appreciate your support. On that happy note, on that bumbling note, I remain the king of Tulip Avenue and Croatian sensation, Johnny Jurisic.
And I remain your humble servant, Robin Adair, a proud British Columbian, a proud Canadian, and very proud to be a Vancouver Canucks fan these days. Yes. Again, as I represent all of these different interests and all these different exciting things that we love to follow on a weekly basis, I say rumble on.